Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Carol G.
Juan Gabriel.
Christina Aguilera.
What do these three have in common?
You mean apart from impeccable style, chart-topping canciones, and drama?
Facts, yes, all of the above are correct, but most importantly, they're some of the biggest Latin icons in the world. And they're just a few of the game-changing Latin stars we're covering in Becoming an Icon Season 2. Listen to Becoming an Icon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, welcome into the Finch Bros Football Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Sylvester. Mike Tagliere is indeed out this week. Now, he said it's because you guys made fun of him and said he looks like Danny DeVito. He's actually taken a well-deserved week off. We've got Kyle Yates here. We've got a great guest as well. Yates, what's up, buddy?
Hey, not much. I'm glad to be back from vacation. It was super nice,
right?
But I don't know. I was going to talk about this with you, Bobby, but I don't know what it's like for you, but I've had to reframe like what vacationing actually means when I have a young child. My son's about to turn 2 this week, which is crazy. And vacationing with a young child is just completely exhausting. Man, I was so
You're
tired.
You're like ready to get back to work, aren't you?
I was. I needed a vacation for my vacation, man.
Yeah, dude. Our guest today is Chris Meany, head of content at Fade the Noise. He's on Twitter at Chris Meany. I'm at Bobby Fantasy Pro, and Yates is at Kyle Y NFL. Chris, thanks for coming to the show. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. Obviously, big fans of what you guys are doing. Missing Tags.
Thanks.
Hopefully, he's having a good time for sure, but happy to join you too. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, it's our pleasure, man. Always good to have you on. And here's what we're going to be talking about today, okay? We've got 15 high-risk picks. We're each going to share 5 of them. I'm not sure if these are high-risk picks that you guys like. I'm just going to talk about some guys that are high risk and get the content out there. After that, we've got some listener mailbag questions. If you ever want to submit questions to the listener mailbag, you can always hit us up on Twitter. Again, at Bobby Fantasy Pro, at Mike Tagliere NFL, at Kyle Y NFL. If you want to hit up Dan Harris, I don't know why you would. Dan Harris, hey, on Twitter. I'm just messing. Dan is awesome. Or we've got the listener mailbag, mailbag@fantasypros.com. Now, before we get into our high-risk picks, I want to tell you guys we've got a contest going on. We're giving away a signed Davante Adams Packers jersey. You can check out the details at fantasypros.com/contest. Basically, all you need to do, it takes like 30 seconds. Leave us an honest review on Apple Podcast or Stitcher, then take a screenshot of that review and send it to us at contest@fantasypros.com. And this contest ends here in a couple days, July 31st at 11:59 p.m. Eastern time. So be sure to enter as soon as possible. All right, guys, you ready to roll?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right. I was trying to decide if I want to talk about something else. I'm going to save it towards the end. So here's what we're going to do, okay? Yates, I'm going to let you go first, and then Chris, you're going to go next. I'll go, and then we'll just continue in that roundtable fashion.
Yeah, so if we're talking about high-risk players, we're talking about players that we're looking at their ADP, their average draft position, and we're trying to compare it to their overall outlook. Can these guys pay off? Sure, absolutely. They can certainly hit, but there is definitely high risk involved, especially, like I said, when you factor in their ADP. So I'm looking at someone right now, guys. It's Nick Chubb. I'm looking at Nick Chubb, and currently
yes,
the RB8 in ECR, the RB8 in ADP. You need, for him to be a top 10 running back, for you to be drafting him as a top 10 running back, he absolutely has to get a ton of work on the ground, because he's not going to be a factor through the receiving game with Kareem Hunt there. So when we're talking about Nick Chubb, he has to be 270 plus carries and 10 plus rushing touchdowns in order for him to finish as a top 10 running back. When you are drafting him there, now can he do it? Absolutely. He's a phenomenally talented running back. They've improved the offensive line in Cleveland this offseason. I think he absolutely can do it. But when we're talking about someone that you, when you are drafting a top 10 running back, you need them to finish there. You know, ask people who drafted David Johnson last year, right? You know, we need to be, and in no way am I comparing Nick Chubb to David Johnson. I'm just saying you have to be sure that this player is going to finish as a top 10 running back. And Nick Chubb definitely carries some risk with him this year.
I'm not sure that he's going to be. Chris, I'm not drafting Nick Chubb anywhere just because after Kareem Hunt came, they're virtually the same fantasy player. Now, Chubb was getting more touches, but Hunt was a lot more efficient because he's getting that third down work. He's getting the passing game work. Are you going to be drafting Nick Chubb at the end of the first round?
No, I'm not. I'm with you guys. It's 3 for 3. And, you know, Yates said it best. It's no knock on Chubb. He's extremely skilled. I mean, you just look at all the numbers, like 5 yards per carry. He's second among backs with 290 carries. He just shy of 300 carries, you know, fourth in touches, top 10 in terms of, you know, usage inside the red zone. He just got a ton of work. But when Kareem Hunt was, when he got onto the roster, he was a factor. And I think Yates said it best when he was just talking about catches out of the backfield. And that's what we want out of backs that we're going to get early. We want as many bell cow backs as we can, guys that are still going to stay on the field and get those red zone looks. And towards the end of the season, I know there's a new coaching staff in there. They may change their ways a little bit. They definitely struggled as a team inside the red zone. Baker Mayfield, a big part of that. But, yeah, you know, it could be Kareem Hunt. He could be the goal line back. We've seen him before in KC, how productive he was, and he's the guy that's going to be catching balls in the backfield. So yeah, I agree. I think Chubb is, he's a fade that early, and it's again, it's not a knock. I think arguably one of the best running backs in the NFL, just like pure talent wise. Mm-hmm. But he's just not going to get that opportunity this year.
And yeah, I think Kareem Hunt is as well. So that, I mean, I have no idea what's going to happen.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's someone who I would love to have as my RB2 on my roster, right? Like, I think he has tremendous upside, and I think that if I can get him as that RB2 where I don't need to rely on him, right? But mm-hmm. That's not where he's going. He's going as the RB8 in ADP. Right.
But, I mean, there's guys, Kenyon Drake, ADP 22, Miles Sanders, ADP 21, Aaron Jones, ADP 15. I'd rather have any of those three over Nick Chubb.
That's their overall ADP, right?
That's their overall ADP. Yeah, right. Nick Chubb's 12. So they're being drafted. They're going to be on the board when Nick mm-hmm. Chubb is available, yeah, is what I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, all of those guys, you know, Bobby, you mentioned Kenyon Drake. I mean, Jacobs is a guy that I wouldn't be shocked if, I know he's not going to catch a lot of balls in the backfield, but he could be top 5 in terms of touches. You know, he's getting all that goal line work. So yeah, there's several backs. And I guess I'll just continue with the next one here. And I know people are split, so I'm interested to hear what you guys have to think about Clyde Edwards-Helaire and, you know, all the hype that, you know, right away when the Chiefs drafted him at the end of the first round, you know, it was Dynasty 101, like, this is the guy. And then you hear Andy Reid talk about, you know, he could be better than Brian Westbrook, who was phenomenal, had a great career. And what Andy Reid has been able to do with his running backs, not just Brian Westbrook, Shady McCoy in Philadelphia, Kareem Hunt, what we already talked about, but he had the phenomenal rookie season, even Damian Williams last year towards the end of the season. And now we hear news that there's going to be no preseason games. And I think these rookies are just going to be behind the eight ball a little bit, trying to learn the offense of the playbook, protect, obviously, of course, Patrick Mahomes. And you just look at KC overall, they're not a team that ran the ball a ton last year. I mean, only 5 teams had fewer rushing attempts than KC last season. So how much work is Edwards-Helaire going to get? Is he going to get that goal line work? I think Damian Williams is the big winner here with no preseason games happening and how he finished last year. I wasn't in on Damian Williams last year. I'll admit that. You know, I was looking at a guy who never had over 50 carries in a season. I liked the offense. I liked the appeal, but I just didn't know how, if he could, you know, be durable for a full season, which he wasn't, and if he could be a guy that could handle 15 to 20 touches a game. And he really wasn't. I mean, his first 6 games, he had fewer than 30 rushing yards, but you saw what he did in the postseason. You saw what he did in the Super Bowl, just shy of 200 rushing yards, 94 yards in the air on 20 targets, 6 total touchdowns. I think he has this backfield at least to start. And I know, looking at Fantasy Pros, I'm seeing Clyde Edwards-Helaire RB17. I think that's more fair. He is the type of guy in this offense that probably only needs about 10 to 15 touches to be productive, to put RB1, at least low-end RB1 numbers up. But I think out of the gate, this is Damian Williams' backfield, and I have more interest in him than I do in Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
You were going to start a big fight between Yates and I. We actually already had a fight in an article called, we have a content series called Fantasy War of Words, and we talked about Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I've got him, I'm not drafting him. I've got him as my RB20, just because I think, yeah, this is going to be Damian Williams' backfield for the first month. And even when it's not, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is not going to get those workhorse touches. Do I think that he has upside? Oh, absolutely. He could be the man. He could be a league winner.
Yeah.
but I'm not drafting him expecting that. Now, Yates, you are going to be drafting him?
So I've been changing my tune because of the preseason, baby. Right? Like, this is something that when we did that, it's important for context too. Like, when we did that War of Words that's article, true. That was before we knew that there wasn't going to be a preseason. Right. Now that's gone. So I am completely on board with what Chris is saying here with the context of this is going to be Damian Williams' backfield primarily to begin the season, because they're not going to just trot out Clyde Edwards-Helaire as the unquestioned starter week one with no preseason, right? Now, I think he's immensely more talented than Damian Williams, and can he, you know, outplay Williams in camp? Absolutely. But I don't think that that's going to be the thing. So I'm going through and I'm readjusting all my rankings. Like, I'm pulling rookies back down and I'm going through that process. The benefit here, though, the other side of it is that Edwards-Helaire's ADP has been coming down. He was currently at the RB12. So I think and he's now at RB15. So we're starting to see the general public cool on him a little bit. And I think it's because of what Chris said, that there's no preseason. And so I think that's the benefit here, where he's not as risky of a pick as he was early on, right? Where we were drafting him as a top, I think he was RB12, like I said. So there's a little bit of a benefit here, where if I can get him as my RB2, I'm fine with that. If I can get him as my RB3 in some spots, I'm definitely good with that. But yeah, he definitely comes with more risk now than he did, I think, in my opinion, a month ago.
And I'm going to throw you a bone too, because, you know, we argued and everything, but once we get to the second half of the season, I mean, I'm looking at the running backs. I can only find five guys that I think are more likely to be the RB1 in the second half than Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Because when you get that much talent in that kind of offense, if he's the head dog, I mean, Christian McCaffrey's obviously above him. Saquon, Zeke, Kamara. Besides that, maybe Dalvin Cook, maybe Joe Mixon is more likely, but I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire in that offense is more likely to finish as the RB1 in the final 8 weeks than Cook or Joe Mixon. It's a major boomer bust pick.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, if you look at NFC leagues, where, you know, the money leagues, I was taking a look before we came on, just drafts from June 1st up until now. So it's a 2 month sample here. And he has the biggest range of outcomes. Like, he's been drafted as early as pick 9 and as late as pick 35. So there is a crazy amount of range here with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You're either all in and you love the fact that he, like I said before, it could be like Austin Eckler, like, where he just gets, you know, 8 carries a game, 3 or 4 catches out of that backfield, and he's fine. He's turning out to be a low-end RB1 for you. The upside is absolutely tremendous. And you bring up a good point that now that he's starting to kind of fall down boards, if you can get him around pick 35, pick 36, I think there's tremendous value there. But when he was drafted early on, doing drafts myself, this is a guy that was taken in the first round, early second. It's just right. It's just a little bit too much risk there.
Here's my first risky pick. This is somebody that could win you your league. And if you draft him in the second or third round, there is a decent chance that you are going to completely regret it, because rushing quarterbacks, especially slender ones like Lamar Jackson, just tend to get hurt a lot more often than other quarterbacks. And if that happens, if he's rushing the ball 130 times in a season, if that happens, your team's screwed if you're wasting your second or third round pick.
Yeah, I think it's a hard narrative to try, or a hard thing to try to figure out, because I don't think we've ever seen a runner at the quarterback position like Lamar Jackson. Like,
never.
It's not that he is just out there like embracing contact willingly. Like, there are a few plays where he lowers his shoulder and you just kind of go like, no, don't do that. But then he is just outright making people miss, like, just completely. Like, go put on, you know, Lamar Jackson juke highlights on YouTube, and it's just insane. So he avoids contact better than I think any other quarterback that we've seen, especially one that rushes as much as he did. Guys, 147 attempts in 2018, and then 176 rushing attempts last season. That's just absurd. So I'm not projecting him to be around that number. I have him around 140 rush attempts. I expect that offense to balance out just a little bit, still be primarily run heavy, but I think that it's a valid point, Bobby, where you're saying that if you are investing in Lamar Jackson, especially at a second or third round draft pick, you're sacrificing depth at other crucial positions. And so, especially too, like, what are your thoughts here, Bobby, where what if Lamar Jackson misses a couple weeks because he gets COVID-19? Like, we haven't talked about that a ton. We're seeing players opt out now. We're seeing players be placed on, you know, the COVID-19 injured reserve list, where they can come off of that later. It's not like a typical injured reserve. But what if Lamar Jackson misses 3 weeks because he contracts COVID-19 and gets put on that injury reserve list? Now you're screwed, because you invested a high pick.
I think that's the same with any second or third round pick, though. I mean, I think everyone has a virtually the same likelihood. I guess what it comes down to for me is I'm looking at the 10 quarterbacks in the last 30 years to carry the ball over 100 times. Tyrod Taylor and Tim Tebow, they lost their jobs. They're not part of the equation. Then you've got monsters like Cam Newton, Steve McNair, Russell Wilson. Wilson's built more like a running back, right? That leaves us with Lamar Jackson himself, Robert Griffin III, Michael Vick, Randall Cunningham, Colin Kaepernick. Guys, that's a lot of injuries between the group. Griffin tore his ACL. Vick broke his leg. Kaepernick had a shoulder injury that cost him to miss 8 games. Cunningham's the only one of that group that survived after rushing for over 100 yards.
Yeah.
Rushing 100 times.
It just takes a toll on your body. Yeah. I have concerns about him already in dynasty formats. Like, he has to change his style a little bit. You're right. You watch him and it's so phenomenal the way that he runs the football and the way that Baltimore runs their offense. It's great. But after a while, like, there's so many needless plays, like 3rd and 2, and this guy's running and taking a shot. Like, it's just, it makes me cringe a little bit because I don't want to see him, you know, get hurt. I'd like to see him develop as a pocket passer and still use his legs a little bit. But we're seeing that right now with Cam Newton, right? I mean, that all the shots that Cam Newton took over the years, and just looking at the attempts, 132 in 2015, then 90, so 40 fewer the next year. Then he went back up to 130, and then that's when you started to see the injuries, the shoulder, and then the foot last year. So, like, I know we're a little bit off topic here, but Cam is not going to be a guy that I think is going to run 100-plus times. He's just going to have to change his style a little bit. So, yeah, I think I'm not one to draft a quarterback early, but I do feel what you're saying, Bobby. Lamar in the second is as solid as he is. He's going to regress a little bit.
Yeah, that touchdown rate's going backwards too. Mm-hmm. Yates, it's back to you, man. Who's your number two here?
Yeah, I'll bring up Aaron Jones. And I think Aaron Jones, while we can all sit here, and I think we can all be in agreement with this, that Aaron Jones is one of the most talented running backs in the NFL. And if we can sit here and we can say, you know, fantasy players have been sitting here saying, like, give Aaron Jones the bell cow workload. You know, just Green Bay, what are you doing? Like, he would be he would be in contention for the RB1, I think.
And 19 touchdowns on like 270 touches last year.
I mean,
man,
he is so incredibly talented, and we saw him finish as the RB2 last year, I believe, off the top of my head. So, like, he can do it. And then Green Bay goes out and drafts AJ Dillon in the second round, who you do not spend a second round pick. Now, we can look at this with all common sense and we can say, oh, the Packers are not going to take Aaron Jones off the field. AJ Dillon is just he's going to be a futuristic play. Like, you know, he's someone that they'll use in specific packages, like, but it's not going to affect Aaron Jones. We can look at it with common sense, and that would be what should happen. That's not going to be the case. You do not spend a second round pick on a running back and do not use him, especially on a rookie contract where you're not going to be, they shouldn't be re-signing AJ Dillon to a second contract in 4 or 5 years, right? So
yeah,
they are going to use AJ Dillon. Now, do they pull AJ Dillon? Like, AJ Dillon's 247 pounds. So do they use him as the goal line back? I think it's stupid if they do, but they might. Like, how can you not use a 247 pound running back at the goal line? So even as immensely talented as Aaron Jones is. So Aaron Jones at RB10 ADP, I think he has the talent to finish as a top five running back easy, but he is a risky pick this year. And that's reflected in, you know, we saw him finish as the RB2 last year. He's now down at the RB10. It's reflected in his ADP, but he is a risky pick because of Green Bay's moves this offseason.
I totally agree, man. I just don't understand what they're doing because this guy's amazing. But even if they didn't draft AJ Dillon, I'd still consider this risky because Jamal Williams was used so much.
Right. That's Matt LaFleur. I mean, he couldn't figure it out when he was with the Titans. He was trying to give Deion Lewis all kinds of work when Derrick Henry was the guy there. And, you know, part of that was Mariota, and, you know, boxes were stacked and Mariota couldn't throw the ball downfield. But yeah, I mean, Matt LaFleur is just going to use his backs. He's going to be completely frustrating, not just for, you know, fantasy owners, but for Green Bay Packer fans and for Aaron Rodgers, and they give him no help at all.
I wonder if it's like an overreaction that he went out and got AJ Dillon because he was like, man, I really blew it with Derrick Henry. I got to go get my own Derrick Henry. And that's like the closest thing you can find is AJ Dillon, who was supposed to go in like the 5th round. But I don't know. Like, Aaron Jones was in a risky situation last year, and he still finishes the fantasy football RB2. I'm going to have some shares. Now I'm taking, like I said, Kenyon Drake and Miles Sanders ahead of him, but I'm going to have some Aaron Jones for sure.
I mean, for me, I would love to have some Aaron Jones shares, but it all depends on what his draft cost is.
If again, I have he to better spend, be your RB2 if he's your RB1.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. If I'm having to select him at the back end of the first round, no way. You know, I'm not doing that. If he's my RB1, like you said, I'm not doing that. I just don't want to have those question marks hanging over, you know, the head of Aaron Jones here as my RB1 on my roster. I just don't want to do it.
All right, guys. Let's see here. It is Chris's turn. Who do you have for us, number two, Chris?
All right. I've been labeled the Darius Geis hater, and I don't like that.
Yes.
Because
yes, Chris. Yes.
We all are. Join the party,
oh, wow.
Baby.
Okay. I've done anyone who's followed my work, I've done some shows with Jake Seeley, and he just like can't handle when I go off about Geis. And it's not the skill set. It is not like I think he's very talented, but it's just, unfortunately, we have to say this. He just seems a little fragile. He's only played 5 games in 2 years. And if you just look at those 5 games, he had a 60-yard run. I don't want to take away, you know, I hear people say this all the time. You take away the 60-yard run, you take away the 45 catch, and he has basically nothing. He had those plays. He looked great on those plays. But those are just two plays that I've really seen from him. I've seen some nice runs and scrimmage and practice over the couple of years, but I really haven't seen a whole lot. And I typically stay away from crowded backfields on bad teams. And Washington is going to be a bad team. Adrian Peterson is still there. We can laugh and joke about AP all we want. He is just shy of 2,000 yards in his last 2 seasons and 12 touchdowns. Just under 900 last year and over 1,000 in 2018. They have Peyton Barber. They have Bryce Love. They have JD McKissick. They drafted Antonio Gibson, and they can move all over the backfield. There's a lot of guys there, moving players. So for me, Geis, I know he's falling down boards. Depending on your draft, I mean, he could fall into the mid 35s, 36, 37, mid 30s. Like that, I think, is okay value. I'm seeing Fantasy Pros RB 30. It's a pass for me. It's an easy pass.
Easy, easy, easy pass. So who are a couple guys you'd rather have over him? Like, are you reaching for the Tony Pollards of the world? Latavius Murray's?
I'd like Latavius. I like Philip Lindsay a little bit later. I mean, he's at back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. I know Gordon is there, but even still, he's not a back I can trust. Damian Williams, who we just talked about, is a back that would go a little bit later on than him. I take a shot on probably Keyshawn Vaughn, even though Jones is getting a little bit of hype lately. Even James White, RB33. Like, I would take a shot on James White as a guy I know that won't get 1,000 on the ground. There's a lot of backs in New England, but I know at least what I'm getting out of him. He's going to provide some catches out of the backfield that I'm not confident Geis will get.
Right. I'll throw in Tariq Cohen in that conversation as well. Now, Yates, I know you don't really have anything to add because we've just talked about Darius Geis so many times on this episode. So we're just going to keep it moving here. My number two is Raheem Mostert. And you're like, wait a second. I thought you were the Raheem Mostert guy. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm taking him at ADP RB24, but that doesn't mean he's not risky. If he wasn't risky, I'd be drafting him in the top 10, baby. I mean, he was the RB2 from the time he took over as the starter. He had one of the greatest stretches in fantasy football in that time, in any part of the season. And it was only in the weeks that he was the starting running back. Like, that's all we've seen from him. They just went out and signed him to an extension, but it's a Kyle Shanahan backfield. So of course it's risky. Chris, what do you think about Raheem Mostert this year?
Yeah, I feel the same as you. I'd like him because I feel like it was a small sample size, but San Fran wants to run the ball. And there's no question that that's going to be their game plan. And I think he's going to be the goal line back. It's more that I'm not a big believer in Tevin Coleman. I'm not really crazy about him. So I think for Mostert, RB24 in that range is a little risky because we are just looking at, you know, a back that's really been on multiple teams over the past couple of years and then just kind of figured out towards the end of the year and had that big monster playoff game against Green Bay. Obviously that's the outlier, but again, it's a decent offensive line. It's a team that wants to run the football, but it's also at the same time Shanahan who uses multiple backs. So I think it could be frustrating situation, but
yeah,
I will have some Mostert shares. I won't completely fade him.
His ADP is rising a little bit too high. I mean, I'm still going to have some shares, but I'm not as excited as I was in the preseason, Yates. Are you going to have any shares?
I probably won't, just because there are other guys that I think don't have as many question marks in that range. So, I mean, Chris said, like Keyshawn Vaughn, like I'll probably be taking Keyshawn Vaughn, even though he's much later.
Over Mostert.
I might. I think it depends on the draft cost at that point. But Keyshawn Vaughn is a very similar argument to what we said earlier, where with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I don't think he's going to be the starter at the beginning of the season. I think Ronald Jones is going to be the guy, and then they'll work in Keyshawn Vaughn eventually. So, but yeah, I think there are some other guys that I would rather have other than Mostert. So I probably won't have any shares.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if Mostert and Montgomery are starting the board, we know who you're going with. Now I'm going with Mostert. Chris, what about you? Are you going Montgomery or Raheem Mostert?
Yeah, I'm a big Montgomery guy.
Are you?
Unfortunate to say, yeah. I don't want to take too much stock into last year. and Nagy just not figuring it out towards the end of the season. But I would take Montgomery because I just feel like at least he's going to have more touches.
Well, you two dorks. Well, he is going to have more touches, but you two dorks are wrong. Let's keep it moving. Yates, who do you have at number three?
I am going to go to the it's actually funny. Chris and I apparently are just using each other's rankings. Like, it's actually kind of crazy. I'm going to bring up quarterback here. I will not have any Daniel Jones this year. And I think there are a lot of people that are excited for his, you know, potential breakout. And if you look at like a receiving core, man, he's got it. He's got it made in the shade. Like, he's got really good wide receivers around him. He's got Evan Engram, who's a talented tight end. And then, of course, Saquon Barkley out of the backfield. But if we are talking about Daniel Jones in the consideration of a streaming quarterback, right, because he's going outside the top 12 quarterbacks.
I just saw he's number 14. What in the world?
Yeah, I've seen him high, get drafted as high as 10.
Yeah, so he's in that borderline, you know, you're drafting him to be a starter or
come
a streamer.
On, people.
Here's the reason why I will not have any Daniel Jones. Week one, Pittsburgh.
Yep. Yeah.
Incredible defense. Week two, Chicago. Incredible defense. Week three, San Francisco. Incredible defense. Week four, Rams. Okay,
fine. Their secondary is pretty good. They got a
secondary
decent pass rush.
Yeah. Week five, Dallas. Really good defense. Week six, Washington. Much improved defense. Week seven, Philadelphia. Incredible defense with the defensive line, and then now you add Darius Slay. Yeah. Tampa Bay, incredible defense week eight. Washington, again, like I said earlier, Philadelphia in week 10. Then their bye week. I am not starting Daniel Jones. I'm not recommending Daniel Jones as a starter until week 12 against Cincinnati.
And then he's got, and then week 13, he has to go into Seattle. And then obviously you get into the championship, you figure it out, but you're not playing him in Baltimore week 16. So
right.
I agree. I actually wrote him up FTN as a guy that I don't mind. I feel like he could be Jameis Winston-like in terms of a guy who can turn the ball over a ton. He had 12 picks, sure. 18 fumbles, 11 lost in 13 games.
Amazing.
You mentioned all the weapons. The defense is bad. There's going to be opportunities where he's just chucking. I mean, he had at least three games that were top three performances for the week. But at the same time, there's going to be so many frustrating performances. And when I wrote him up at FTN, I said, listen, you don't need to draft this guy as quarterback 10, 12, 13. Pick him up off the waiver wire after week three.
Right.
That schedule gets a little bit lighter for him.
Yeah, man. I mean, even in a two quarterback league, I didn't know you were talking about a single quarterback league when you brought him up, because I'm looking at the rankings right now. Like, Brad Evans, that you work with, Chris,
loves him.
QB8. Loves him.
Oh, my There's word. A couple,
number eight. Dan Harris has him QB12. He's one of the top. John Paulson, one of the most accurate experts. And then we go all the way down to the end. Bobby Silvestre, QB24. The lowest guy on Daniel Jones. I am shocked. I had no idea he was in the top 20.
Yeah, I think I got him in that mid-range too, right around 13. But I understand what Yates is saying there. I think there's certainly, I got him at 14. There is some definite risk there. I do like his weapons, but his weapons also haven't been all that durable,
yeah,
which
right.
we'll get to.
Right.
I'm
and
in
I
some
mean,
good company,
he,
by
he
the
does
way,
carry.
Too. There's good, smart people on both sides of the aisle. Andy Barron, Scott Pianowski. There's a lot of smart people down at the bottom and at the top. I have no idea what to do with this.
Yeah, I mean, he does carry rushing upside, so that yeah. does give him a floor, right? Like, he can move. And so sure. that does give him at least a little bit of a floor, where I have him at QB17 right now. And so, but that's also, like, just going through and kind of just plugging in and without looking at schedule, right? I really don't look at schedule much until we get to this time of the year. And I'll have to come back to it, because Chicago just had Eddie Goldman opt out, you know, their nose tackle, which is going to weaken that defense. So then, you know, there's going to be implications here with the opt-out deadline that I'll have to go back and reevaluate these defenses again. But I don't look at schedule until around this time. And when I looked at Daniel Jones's schedule, I was like, oh my word, no,
it's
I need
nightmare.
To adjust this, because that's crazy.
Mike Tagliere, for the record, QB16. So he's a little lower on Daniel Jones as well. Let's keep moving. Chris, who do you have as your number three?
So I'll just stick with the Giants then. I was going to mention this guy towards the end, but Evan Engram is just, again, it's kind of following a theme here that guys we've been talking about, certainly talented. I mean, his rookie season was unbelievable. He looks like a wideout. He's just a beast, a red zone target. But unfortunately, again, and I don't want to just name injury prone guys here, but this guy's missed 13 games over the last two seasons, and it hasn't just been one reoccurring issue. It's been six different injuries. He's coming off the Lisfranc surgery. I don't even know if he's going to be ready to go off the hop. MCL, hamstring, knee, ankle. These are just Jeez. Injuries that he's had over the past couple seasons. So sixth, seventh round for a tight end. I have obviously see the upside. I mean, you only need, when I'm doing my projections for tight ends, and you guys know this, I mean, they're separated by basically a touchdown after you get past the first three or four guys.
Right.
I mean, it's just a couple touchdowns, find some work inside the red zone. You can finish as a top five tight end every single week. The upside is definitely there, but it's a crowded receiving core. Darius Slayton, Golden Tate, Sterling Shepard. You got Saquon catching balls out of the backfield. We just talked about Jones, the inconsistencies there in his game, the tough schedule. So he's just an easy fade for me in that range. I'd rather just take some upside. Usually try to typically get a quarterback inside that range, or if I'm not going to get the Kelce and Kittles of the world or Andrews, I'm just going to wait it out for, you know, a breakout tight end, which was like a Darren Waller of last season. So Ingram in that range is, he's just a fade for me. He's just not durable enough.
Yates is over there doing fist pumps. He's so
ridiculous,
that you're naming
man.
All of his
ridiculous.
Guys.
Wow.
Evan Ingram's one of mine as well. I'm looking at the rankings for Evan Ingram. Yates, you're at number 16, tight end 16. That's near the very bottom. Dalton Del Don.
Oh, wow.
Tight end 15. Bobby Sylvester, tight end 12. Scott Pianowski, tight end 12. There's a lot of guys in the industry who are out on Evan Ingram. Then you've got the complete opposite. Most people have him tight end 6, tight end 7, tight end 8. And you mentioned, is it extraordinary rookie season? I don't think it was very good. I mean, he had 115 targets and only had 722 yards and 6 scores. The only reason that he had a good fantasy performance that season is because he was getting so much volume because Brandon Marshall was hurt. Odell Beckham was hurt. Sterling Shepard was hurt.
Yep.
And Evan Ingram was their de facto wide receiver one.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
He hasn't ever been efficient. He's competing with Saquon Barkley, Golden Tate, Darius Slayton, Sterling Shepard this year. I can't draft Evan Ingram, especially with all the other guys on the board. Hunter Henry, Darren Waller is going at the same time as Evan Ingram. Austin Hooper, Hayden Hurst. Heck, Jonnu Smith. We've talked about him before, Yates. ADP 17 for tight ends. I'd rather have him than Evan Ingram.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, I think the conversation here, if Evan Ingram was going as like the tight end 12 in ECR and ADP, you know, in those ranges, like, I think I would be willing to take the chance because he does have the talent. Like Chris mentioned it, like he is a talented player. Was he efficient in 2017? No, but you can also look at the quarterback that he was throwing to him, and there are extenuating circumstances there, right? We've seen he had a 55.65 catch percentage there in 2017. It bounced up to 70% in 2018, 64% last year. So granted on a much smaller target sample, but so I think if he was going in that range, I would be willing to take the shot, I think, if there weren't these other guys that I liked later on. But he's going as a sixth tight end in ECR and seventh off the board in ADP. Like, there is no way that I'm taking that risk when you factor in, let alone his injury concerns, but then you factor in the fact that this is a very, very crowded receiving core and that these guys are going to take away targets from Evan Ingram.
All right, guys, I'm going to say a name that is going to make some people very upset. But I think a lot of people have forgot that Deontay Johnson is very risky. I mean, he wasn't even playing over James Washington at the end of the season. Deontay Johnson, he might be good, but we don't even know if he's going to play, guys. He's ADP wide receiver 44 right now. I mean, Jameson Crowder is going a full round later.
Love Crowder. Yeah. I'd much rather Crowder is the number one in that offense, and there's no question about it.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm not drafting Deontay Johnson at that ADP, folks.
I want Johnson. This is probably the first one that we've disagreed on all episode with Chris and I essentially using each other's lists. No, I think with Deontay Johnson, I'm on board. And you look at the role in the offense that he's going to play. They're going to kick in Juju into the slot. Deontay Johnson will be starting on the outside on the perimeter. And then they drafted Chase Claypool, who is a big-bodied receiver, 6'4", 238 pounds off the top of my head. So he's a big guy. And they're going to ask him to fill that role on the outside. So I think they run.
But why is Johnson suddenly going to pass James Washington on the depth chart?
Because he's 10 times more talented than James Washington.
I don't know. I mean, we can sit here and say the Steelers are going to do the right thing. But how many times have we just said, okay, it makes sense, so it's going to happen, and then it just doesn't happen? I mean, last year it didn't happen.
Well, last year was super weird where you're talking about these players that you're trying to, they went into the season with the assumption that Juju would be able to take the outside role and excel in it. And he didn't. So then you move towards you're not moving James Washington into the slot. Like, it's just not what he does. He's a field stretcher. So you needed that role to be filled in the offense. And so they kept him on the field.
Yeah. And plus he worked better with Mason Rudolph because they played together in college.
Right. You know, had that last year was super weird for the Steelers offense. I just think we need to kind of take it with a grain of salt. I'm not saying throw it out completely. I'm just saying, like, don't use that as absolutes. So
will you at least say that he's risky? Do you think there's any risk that he just doesn't get
I
that
will,
many
but
touches?
It's all relative to the ADP. Where what did you say his ADP was in the 40s?
Wide receiver 44, right.
No, I don't think that's risky. I don't, personally. Just because at wide receiver 40, whatever, that I don't think that's risky. If he was going as the wide receiver 30, wide receiver 25, whatever, then yes, I would consider that risky. But because his ADP is so low, I don't think that's really risky. And I will have a ton of shares
of
DeAndre
Johnson.
I mean,
for example, this is your team, Yates. Anthony Miller is a more talented wide receiver than Diontae Johnson. He's safer. He's more likely to be on the field. And I think he has more upside. And he's going 11 spots lower just in wide receiver. So like 2-3 rounds lower.
Well, yeah, but I can get both of them at that spot.
Sure. Okay. All right. Chris, what do you think, man?
Yeah, so I think the only risk is Big Ben. Can he stay healthy? Because we've just seen what the offense is without him, and it's, what is it, 12 points a game? I mean, they're a team that
it's
relies on their defense. Yeah. I mean, last year, Yates brought up a good point. I was out on this offense because AB was gone. There's going to have to be some adjustments to Juju that you guys just alluded to in the slot. Can he handle top coverage on the outside? He proved to me that I don't think that he can. I'm not saying that he won't develop, but, you know, they went into that season with Juju there. Dante Moncrief on the outside, who was doing nothing, and then James Washington, who had to deal with poor quarterback play, and then Diontae Johnson, who actually had a pretty solid season, you know, dealing with mediocre quarterbacks. I mean, he led all rookies in catches with 59, and I don't think a lot of people know that, with the rookie class being pretty decent last season. So I think, you know, as long as Big Ben stays healthy, you know, he's just 2 years removed from leading the league in passing yards with just over 5,000, more than Patrick Mahomes. He threw the ball over 600 times. So I think he could, I don't think the offense is going to change. They're going to throw the football. They're going to throw to Juju, get James Washington involved, Johnson, Chase Claypool, which, you know, Yates mentioned as well, and then Connor catching balls out of the backfield if he can stay healthy. So I think the price is fair. But that's another guy that I've noticed. You either really like Johnson and you're drafting him ahead of some other wide receivers that you just mentioned, like Crowder or
Anthony Miller,
or some other bigger name wide receivers, and he's kind of creeping into the late 30s. Like, I know, what is he at, 38, you said? So, like, even ahead of guys like Brennan Cooks or Marvin Jones or Julian Edelman, I've seen him go a little bit higher, you know, on draft day. So he has to fall in that mid-40s to me for me to grab him. But I think the offense could certainly bounce back. It's just Big Ben. That's the biggest risk factor.
All right, Yates, back to you for number four.
Cooper Kupp, guys. I've talked about him a lot on this podcast, where last season, weeks 1 through 8, Cooper Kupp was the wide receiver 2 in all of fantasy football. He was unstoppable. He was incredible. However, weeks 9 through 17, he was a wide receiver 31 over that time frame. So after the bye week, their offense changed and Cooper Kupp wasn't on the field as much. Now, his target totals towards the end of the year last year too were not great. Like, he was around like 4 to 5 targets per game because he just wasn't on the field as much. You saw Robert Woods on the field and Kupp coming off because they were running heavy 12 personnel, which is 1 running back, 2 tight ends on the field, which takes off the slot receiver. So if we're looking at this year and we're talking about Cooper Kupp, and people are just going to look at his fantasy finish from last year, which was still really great because it was inflated by the first half of the season. But guys, ECR wide receiver 15 and ADP of wide receiver 13. You are drafting Cooper Kupp to be a borderline wide receiver 1 for your team. And I think you're drafting the wrong Rams wide receiver. And I think you should be drafting Robert Woods there.
Yeah, this one pains me because I'm such a big Cooper Kupp fan.
Oh yeah, this has nothing to do with his talent. I love his talent.
Yeah.
He was a low-end wide receiver 3 in the second half of the season.
Yeah. The Rams, Yates is right, they changed their offense. They changed the personnel. They were taking him off the field. And Robert Woods just stays on the field. I mean, he's a great run blocker. If they're going to use all the backs, I think Sean McVay said something the other day about that. Yeah, I'm going to use that committee thing, you said, or whatever what it was, with 4 running backs. Like, yeah, that's probably not going to work out well for you. But Cooper Kupp is just, I just think he's so talented. I remember watching the very first game with him and Goff in the preseason. They hooked up. He's always been the number one option in the red zone for Cooper Kupp, even though Tyler Higbee actually had one more red zone target than him last year.
Yeah.
I think maybe an injury slowed him down, and Higbee was really strong towards the end of the season. So I agree. And it does pain me to say, as I said, because I really think Kupp is terrific. I think he's very talented. I think he runs great routes, great hands, red zone reliability is there. So, but it is, he's dead on. I mean, Robert Woods is the guy that you want in that offense, and he's going later. Like, you're going to get him a couple rounds after. So that should be your target.
All right, let me pull up the rankings here really quick to see where we've got them. I've got Cooper Kupp as my wide receiver 21. I didn't realize he was going all the way up at 13. That's bizarre. Yates, you've got him down at 25. You're one of the lowest on him.
I have them both as top 12 wide. It's Kupp and Woods. I think.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
I still
think they're
going to be fine.
Where do you have Jared Goff then?
I still have Goff late. And, you know, this is weird. I've had this conversation before. Like, these two guys could still be solid without the quarterback being all that good, just in terms of volume and target. I think a lot of just both of them are going to just eat every day. I think they're both going to have double-digit targets. And I'm still uncertain that Higbee can be as good as what he was down the stretch, because Everett was okay before he got hurt. So for me, I got Goff 19. So I know it may seem strange for people, but he can both of those guys can still rack up a lot of catches and yards without Goff being like a QB1.
Tags and Harris both have him at wide receiver 17. Chris, you're one of the highest in the industry on Cooper Kupp. You're
soft spot.
Brad Evans has him at wide receiver 9, though. It seems like Brad is super optimistic on like everybody, but obviously he has some guys ranked lower too.
Yeah, we gotta figure out who those guys are.
All right, let's keep going. Yates, you're the one that said Cooper Kupp?
I was the one brought up
Kupp. Cool. Yep. All right, Chris, your turn.
All right, let's go with Amari Cooper. We'll stick on with the wide receivers here. So Amari Cooper, as a lot of people know, if you've had him, he's probably won you some weeks, maybe won you some championships or let you down. He's been very boom or bust. I mean, his last two seasons with Dallas have been his best two. 12.5, half point in a PPR setting, half point, 2018, that was a solid year for him. Improved in 2019, 13 points per game. But I just looked deeper into some of his games, and he's just, again, so inconsistent. We'll start with the good. Cooper, 34 point. That's what he touched in one of his games last season. Hit 20s two other times, so three unreal performances. And then the bad, he failed to hit the 10-point mark in a full-point setting, so a full-point PPR, 1 point per catch, in six of his 16 games, and he had two zeros in there. And then you go to the year before, averaged 19 points per game his first five contests. Over his last seven, he averaged just 7 fantasy points. So again, it's just been hot or cold. You look at weeks 12, 14, 15, scored fewer than 5 points. They bring in CeeDee Lamb. You got Blake Jarwin there. There's a lot of bodies. And again, he's just really, and I don't want to take too much away from what he's done inside the division. It is a weak division, but he is absolutely just ate the Eagles secondary up. And was looking a little bit deeper into some of the games where he has disappeared, and was just looking at those five games against Philadelphia. 44 targets, 4 touchdowns. He had 11 yards per attempt, 98 yards per game, a 64% catch rate. Philly brings in Darius Slay, who Yates brought up earlier. 2 games against Slay, 0 touchdowns, 3 yards per catch, and a 33% catch rate and only 20 yards per game. So it's not just that one game. I know they're only going to play Philly twice, but there's a lot of inconsistencies. He's not used at all in the red zone. You go back to his Raider days in 2016. Crabtree and Seth Roberts combined for 41 red zone targets. Cooper had 13. He had 9 in 2017. He had 11 in 2018. Last year, he was third on the team in Dallas behind Jason Witten and Ezekiel Elliott in red zone targets. He is not a threat at all in the red zone. And again, you bring in CeeDee Lamb, there's just more bodies there for Dak Prescott to throw the football. So as a guy who's going anywhere from wide receiver 11, 12, 13, I just feel like he's an easy, again, I'm saying this word a lot, an easy fade, because there's just too many inconsistencies from him. He shows up big and then he disappears.
I don't know if I can fade him just because the upside is so great, but at the same time,
it's really
dang risky, man. He was just as good as Michael Gallup in terms of fantasy points per game last year, and they add CeeDee Lamb.
Right.
I won't draft him at his ADP, but I'll get some shares.
It's important to bring up in that conversation, ADP wide receiver 9. I mean, and that's where he finished last year. So you were drafting him at his ceiling.
Ceiling? Because when he came over the year before in 8 games, not knowing the Cowboys playbook, he was the wide receiver 1 in that time.
Well, I mean, for him to finish consistently as a top 10 wide receiver, like the other guys that are going to be in this range are going to be doing it on the back of 130, 125 plus targets and, significant touchdown upside. I mean, Amari Cooper, 107 targets in 2018, 119 in 2019. I had in my mindset before I went down, sat down and did projections, I had in my mind that Amari Cooper was like 140 target per year guy. I don't know why I had that in my mind, but that was just what I expected to see. And so I was shocked to see that he's only at 107, 119 targets.
Yeah.
And that was with Randall Cobb as your slot receiver. Randall Cobb had 82 targets last year. Mm-hmm. Off the top of my head, Witten had 82 targets last year. Like, these guys are...
So I'm not saying, I'm not sure if you're saying, like, is Cooper really risky because he doesn't get targets? Or are you saying he's got a lot of upside because he could finally get more targets?
No, I'm saying that he's not going to get targets because now you're bringing in someone as talented as CeeDee Lamb.
Sure.
Like, I loved Lamb. I had him lower than, I didn't have him at wide receiver one because I had concerns about him facing press coverage in the NFL, especially after what he saw in the Big 12. But if he's going to be replacing Randall Cobb in the slot, he's not going to see press coverage. So that is an incredible opportunity for him to just be a target monster in this offense, which I think limits Amari Cooper's upside. And if that's the case, he's not going to see the red zone targets like Chris mentioned. So, yeah.
And Bobby, you're talking about the upside. I mentioned the 34 point showing he had last year. I mean, how about 2018? He had one game with 45 fantasy points in week 14 and then just 10 in week 15 and 16. It's just all over the place. Six games of double digit fantasy points that season. His first one with Dallas mixed in with the Raiders, who, by the way, didn't target him at all in opening drives that season. Like, they didn't use him
properly
at all.
So weird. Right.
But then six games with the double digit fantasy points and then nine with 10 or fewer points. So it's just some games he really shows up where he takes advantage of those soft matchups, and then there's other ones where he just, I feel like he kind of just gets taken away by top corners, and then he mix in a few drops that he's had, and then he's cleaned that up a little bit over the past couple of years. But I just think he's a DFS play. He's a best ball guy. Yep. I think if you're going to draft someone to be your wide receiver one, you want to draft somebody who you can feel confident that's going to get at least double digit targets or close to it every single game, and I just don't feel that way.
That'd be great. Yeah, and I don't think you can trust Cooper to do that. I agree. Here's my number four. It is Mark Ingram. He's in his 30s. They drafted J.K. Dobbins. And the general manager has come out and said he expects to use all four running backs next year. They all do different things very well. I just do not see the touches for Mark Ingram. And I also think that it's a lot riskier because what if Dobbins just passes him up? Then we're talking about a backup running back that you've got as your RB2?
Yeah. And you know, Gus Edwards, too, I mean, we can joke about him, but he's still on the depth chart. Like, he's still a guy last year that had over 700 rushing yards and over 130 attempts. He's still just there. So, it's a pretty crowded backfield. I mean,
Mark Ingram had 50% of the rushing yards last year for this team. His touchdowns are going backward, no doubt about it.
No question, yeah.
Yeah, no, completely. I mean, insane touchdown totals last year. There's no way that repeats, especially when you factor in J.K. Dobbins and how talented he is. Now, the benefit could be, like we've mentioned with these other rookie running backs, that Dobbins is probably not going to get up to speed as quickly as he would, you know, if there was a preseason and, you know, a normal training camp. So Ingram could get off to a hot start, and he's being drafted as the RB21 in ADP right now. He was someone who I actually was considering adding to this list, Bobby. So I'm definitely on your side here. I do think that he is a risky pick because I loved Dobbins at Ohio State, and I think he is going to be a fantastic addition in this scheme. So I think he could be someone where he could take over this job. He could be the main guy, you know. Ingram would still be involved, of course, but Dobbins could take over this job towards the later half of the year.
Yeah. All right. Last pick for everybody. Yates, you're first.
Keenan Allen. I've talked about him a lot.
Oh, no. Get out of here, you turd.
Sorry, man. Yeah, Keenan Allen for me is someone who's an easy, like, every criteria that we want to put, fade, risky pick, whatever. Because I mentioned, I said earlier, and I mentioned that we have to factor in ADP into this conversation of a risky pick, right? Someone who is a injury-prone player but is going as the wide receiver 70, you know, it's not a risky pick because it's not, the investment isn't as much.
Sure.
However, with Keenan Allen going as a wide receiver 19 in ADP right now, I just can't get on board. And I think that for him, this offense is going to go from, I did a video the other day talking about how the Chargers are going from 597 pass attempts last season with Philip Rivers, and they're going to be lucky to crack 500 this year. And if that's the case, Keenan Allen's target totals are going to come crashing down, and he's been insanely productive on the back of pure target volume. Now, it's the same kind of argument with Cooper Kupp. I'm not sitting here saying that Keenan Allen isn't a talented wide receiver. I think he's one of the better receivers in the entire NFL and one of the best route runners, pure route runners. However, for Keenan Allen to be effective from a fantasy football perspective, he has to do it on the back of 148 targets, which is what he's averaged over the past three seasons. So I just don't see it happening this year.
All right, Chris, before I lose my mind, it is your chance to get in here and say what you think about it.
Yeah, I'm not totally interested in Keenan Allen, but if he's going to fall down draft boards, like you're getting him, what, wide receiver 23? Like I've seen him go in the mid-20s where I'm like, okay, maybe I can get by with Keenan Allen now, but I think it's silly to expect the type of production that, you know, this season that he's had in years past is some things that, you know, Kyle had just mentioned. You know, Tyrod Taylor, is he going to be under center? Is he going to be throwing the football? I mean, he's never had a season where he's thrown over 436 passes in a year. Are they going to slow to pace down a little bit, run the football? Is it going to be Justin Herbert under center? What's his usage going to be like? Is he going to be throwing the football 35 plus times a game? I don't feel like he will. So Keenan Allen, could he get to 1,000 yards? Sure. I mean, we've seen it almost every single year from him. But I agree with Yates that I don't think he's going to be the type of wide receiver that, you know, 159 targets 3 years ago. I just don't see that happening. But I do feel like in a full point PPR setting, the catches may be there. I think he could get at least 80, 85 catches, just usage into the slot, just pepper him. But I think I'm just down on this offense. I'm just not excited about it overall.
We're getting a wide receiver 22 who just so happens to be to join Michael Thomas, DeAndre Hopkins, and Julio Jones as the only four players over the last 3 years with at least 800 fantasy points. Only one of only four wide receivers with at least 800 PPR fantasy points. Keenan Allen has been outrageously good. And I get it. There's been a lot of volume. I agree that the volume's going backwards. Okay, so maybe I move him down from wide receiver 4 in that time period to wide receiver 12 or 13. I'm not moving down to wide receiver 22, man. I'm going to have so many shares of Keenan Allen. And every time he scores a touchdown, I'm going to be tweeting you guys. And I'm going to tell you guys, you were wrong.
Well, I mean,
I got him at 19, I think. You know, there's two guys that fall down in this range I think you guys can both talk about. It's T.Y. Hilton or Keenan Allen.
Oh, yeah, give me Allen,
guys,
baby.
That are, and I would rather have Allen.
Sure.
Yeah,
like yes,
if I'm choosing between
well.
The two, I would rather have Allen. But those are the two guys that have been wide receiver ones before in the past, solid twos that a lot of people are out on. So, again, if they're going to continue to fall, I mean, you can jump on them. But I don't know if he's going to be a solid wide receiver two anymore.
Pat Fitzmaurice, by the way, joins you, Yates, near the bottom of the list. He's got Keenan Allen, wide receiver 29 right now.
Okay.
Tags has him wide receiver 27. So I guess I'm the outsider here, which I'm just shocked by because he's been so good.
Well, I mean, it's looking at the numbers and saying that if you are projecting 500, like I have him down, I have Los Angeles down for 500 pass attempts. Okay. So then you're looking at a target share breakdown. And especially when you factor in Austin Eckler is going to be incredibly involved.
Sure.
I have him down for a 19% target share. Mike Williams at an 18% target share. He's still going to be involved. He's not going to be, you know, I have that down. That equates to 5.63 targets per game. And then Hunter Henry is going to be involved as well as a 19% target share. At that point, you're struggling to give Keenan Allen more than 22 to 25% of the targets. And if that's the case, it's not going to equate to more than 110, 120 total targets. And he's not someone who is a pure touchdown guy. He hasn't scored more than 8 touchdowns in a season since his rookie campaign. He's averaged 6 over the last 3 years. So he's not going to be someone, especially with Tyrod Taylor, this offense isn't going to throw for 30 touchdowns. So for him to be all the way up there at the, you know, where you have him, Bobby, he has to do it on the back of an insane target share volume and he has to outperform what he's been doing previously with touchdowns and a yards per reception standpoint.
Tyrod Taylor throughout his career has been a better quarterback than Phillip Rivers was last year.
I mean,
touchdown rate, interception rate, yards per attempt. Phillip Rivers was awful last year. And now he's coming into an offense, Tyrod Taylor, with all of these weapons. He's never had weapons before, man.
It's very true. I mean, you look at what he had in Buffalo and it wasn't great. You know, he's walking into one of the most talented receiving corps that he's ever had. But he's still not going to be someone that they are using Tyrod Taylor and they drafted Justin Herbert to fit what Chris said. They want to slow the clock down. They want to control the ball, bring the pace of the game down, and rely on a solid defense. That's why they traded back up into the first round to get Kenneth Murray, who I loved. And this defense is scary. Talking about Derwin James, Kenneth Murray, Melvin Ingram, Joey Bosa. Like,
it's nuts.
And then you have Chris Harris at corner, Casey Hayward. I mean, it's just insane. Yeah. So if when you're in a division that now that you're facing the Chiefs, you're not going to outscore them. Like, it's just, you have to admit to that. You have to recognize that you're just not going to outscore them. So at that point, try to beat them with an amazing defense. Sure. Try to slow them down and keep the ball out of their hands. That's what Los Angeles is doing this season. And it's going to come, it's going to bring their pass attempts crashing down.
My point is, if he was wide receiver 11 with Phillip Rivers last year, he's going to be a top 20 wide receiver with Tyrod. That's my take. Let's keep moving though. Let's see, Chris, you've got your last guy, and then I've got one more, and we'll move on over to the listener mailbag.
All right, so switch it up, and you guys, enough Chargers talk. I was going to bring up Hunter Henry, but let's go with a quarterback. I'll mention Aaron Rodgers just because of name value here alone. We've already talked about what they did for him at the draft, which is absolutely nothing. I mean, people are getting excited about Alan Lazard and Devin Funchess. Like, those Devin Funchess fans seem to settle down. I think we only like him because he's going, like, wide receiver mid-60s.
Right. So
there's no weapons, but even still with no weapons, Rodgers was able to throw for 4,000 yards, rock solid, 26-4 TD to interception rate. Ratio. Like, so those numbers are solid, but I think overall a ninth place finish, but 14th in fantasy points per game. And just looking overall at his numbers, I mean, he failed to hit the 300 yard passing mark in 12 of his 16 games. He only threw for 216 yards or fewer in 7 contests. So not a lot of those big performances that we've seen before in years past. He only had 3 games with more than 2 passing touchdowns. Three games with more than 2 passing touchdowns. I think one of them came against the Raiders. He threw 4 or 5. And on top of that, 7.0 yards per attempt, his second lowest mark in the last 12 years. And 11.4 rushing yards per game was a career worst for him. So he's obviously a little bit older. He's dealt with some injuries. This offense has changed. We already talked about another running back that they draft and Matt LaFleur using all the running backs that he could use. So I just don't know where that upside is anymore. And the position is just so deep to take A-Rod as a top 12 QB. You don't need to on name value alone. If he falls to the 15 range, sure, you can grab him. There's a little bit of upside there. He can finish as a top 10. I just finished saying that he was a top 10 quarterback last year, but I think those days of just drafting Rodgers like quarterback 6, 7, 8, oh, I got Aaron Rodgers, like, I don't think he can be totally excited about that anymore. I don't mean to cut the guy short. I still think he has a lot to offer as a guy who could bring Green Bay back to, you know, a conference championship game or something. But I just feel like from a fantasy standpoint, I think if you're drafting him as a top 10 quarterback, you're just drafting on name value alone. So he just points per game, I just feel like he'll be right around that same mark, if not worse, maybe more of a decline with age.
Chris, I know that you're from Canada, and so you're a very nice guy, but I am going to fight you. I'm going to fight you for this.
Come on.
Yates, you first, though. You tell me what you think about Aaron Rodgers.
I'm on Chris's side.
Oh, no, I'm going to fight you both. You guys are done for. So Aaron Rodgers last year was still extremely efficient, guys. The only difference,
he
would have been the quarterback 2 in fantasy football if he had the same touchdown rate as he's had throughout his career. Now, granted, he's 36 years old, so it's not going to be the same. But the touchdown rate the last 2 years has been missing. Besides that, he has been awesome in every facet of the game. And if you look at him, he's had 10 healthy seasons, and he's been a QB1 or QB2 in 8 of them. And he would have been again last year if his touchdown rate was that high.
But it can't be. But the last 2 years, right. Why has it been lower? Because he's been missing guys. Like,
yeah.
I mean, Jordy Nelson was off that team. Randall Cobb, who had like a 14 touchdown season with him 1 year, is off that team. He's just, there's
but
really
those
no
guys
weapons.
Are, I mean, are, those guys were nothing up. Outside of Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers, Davante Adams, everyone thought he right. was trash. And then Aaron Rodgers made him a monster. James Jones had like 15 touchdowns with Aaron Rodgers. And I get it, Aaron Rodgers is 37 years old, but Marquez Valdes-Scantling could be a stud because of Aaron Rodgers. Man. I'm not ready to discount him quite yet. Now, I agree. I'm not reaching for Aaron Rodgers, but I definitely think he's got some upside. I'm taking him in the top 10, no doubt about it.
I think we can sit here and we can try to look back and we can say that his touchdown rate and, you know, we can look back to previous seasons, but then we have to look at the here and now and that this offense is drastically different than what he was working with previously with Mike McCarthy. And where they want to take the ball. Again, we talk about common sense. They want to take the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hands.
Right. They just went out and drafted 2 fullbacks in the second and third round.
Makes no sense.
I do not get it. But because I think Aaron Rodgers is one of the most talented quarterbacks to ever play the game of football.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about his touchdown rate being what it, you know, if it was what it was previously, but everything has to be looked at through the lens of what is this season. And when you're talking about guys like Alan Lazard, MVS, Equanimeous St. Brown, and Devin Funchess, those are the guys who are all competing for the wide receiver 2 position. And then you have Jay Sternberger. Like, I like Sternberger, but he's a huge question mark at tight end. You have Mercedes, I think it's Mercedes Lewis is their tight end too. So, like, the surrounding wide receiver core for Aaron Rodgers is not going to be what it needs to be for him to hit that touchdown rate. And so I just don't see it happening.
We'll see, man. We will see. hold on just a second. All right. Yeah, that was all the guys. No, you went Aaron Rodgers, so it's my turn. Okay. Okay. Yeah, sorry, guys.
Finish strong.
I was going to finish with Allen Robinson just because Yates made me mad about something earlier. And I was going to change my mind and go Allen Robinson. But I'm actually going to stick with my original guy and just make everybody mad because everybody loves Kenny Golladay, right? Guys, Kenny Golladay just is not going to get the targets. I mean, there's a chance that he does. If he blows up and gets the 140, 150 targets that he deserves, I agree, he's very good. He deserves them. Then he's going to be great. He's going to exceed his ADP, but that's not going to happen, guys. 119 in 2018, 116 in 2019. Marvin Jones comes back for a full season. I can't do it, guys. Wide receiver 7? No. No. He's going ahead of Odell Beckham.
Well, that I understand. I think it's, yes, I agree that some regression is coming because there's no way that he is going to see, or at least I don't think he will.
Who's the better,
I don't think he's going to repeat an 18.3 yards per reception that he had last year. That's absurd.
Right. Yeah. And he's not getting 11 touchdowns on 116 targets either.
But the thing working in his favor is that Matthew Stafford will be back. And he put up ridiculous numbers with David Blough. And didn't they have another quarterback in? They were running on their
Driscoll.
Third. Yes, Jeff Driscoll. So,
yeah.
I mean, he put up those numbers with those quarterbacks. And if he gets Stafford back now, fully healthy, I think the sky's the limit for Golladay. I mean, 11 touchdowns, I'm not projecting that, but it's in the realm of possibilities. Sure.
So I like Golladay, but I think the big thing here to talk about is Marvin Jones. Like, I'm not comparing the two skill-wise. I think Kenny Golladay is definitely ahead of
course,
Marvin Jones skill-wise, but you can get Jones in the mid, like what, wide receiver 40? I know he's jumped up a little bit because I think a lot of smart people in the industry like Marvin Jones, but you just look overall, Jones averaged 7.1 targets per game last season, 31st among wide receivers. Kenny Golladay, 7.2 targets per game,
right,
even with Jones missing the final four games. They're like, in terms of Stafford's guy, they're like 1A and 1B. Now, there's a little bit more upside with Kenny Golladay, I think, but at the same time, Jones has had the edge in touchdowns, a team high 23 over the last 3 years. He's been the guy inside the red zone, Stafford's favorite. There's one or two guys. It's just those two guys. I think that TJ Hawkinson is going to be able to take a little bit of a step forward, but there's not a lot of options on Detroit. They want to run the football with Patricia, you know, using all of his backs. But at the same time, this is a team that just lost Slay. They're not going to be good defensively. And if Stafford's healthy, he's going to be throwing the football 40 plus times a game. So I think that both of these guys are fine, but I just like the value with Marvin Jones. Like this, I get more Jones than Kenny Golladay. I'm not ready to say Golladay is going to be a bust, but I think that the value is just terrific with Jones.
All right, guys. Hold on just a second. I am looking for the listener mailbag questions. Where in the world are they? I'm losing my mind today. I need tags to be here to just like eat up the time when I'm being an idiot. Here we go. I got some listener mailbag questions. Again, if you want to send them in, it's mailbag@fantasypros.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter at @BobbyFantasyPro, at Mike Taglier NFL, at DanHarris80, and at KyleYNFL. This one's from Mike Robert on Twitter. Are there any league settings or adjustments that we should be considering given the potential implications of COVID? My league's already discussing additional IR roster spots. Anything else?
I don't think that we should be adjusting like scoring settings, right? Like, you don't go change your league from a full PPR to standard, right? I'm just throwing something out of the top of my head. Like, don't adjust any scoring settings, but I do think that we need to be ready to make our benches bigger and also add some additional IR spots. Like, Ryan McDowell put out on Twitter the other day was like, just do unlimited IR spots, like, and kind of use the honor system here, because this season is going to be ridiculous. Like, we just need to admit that right now and be ready for it. Like, it's going to be unprecedented. People are going to be inactive on game day, which is why I'll plug this right now. Like, go to fantasypros.com, get my playbook, and use that autopilot feature. It is going to save you this season, where it'll take the player who is, you know, on game day, say you're not able to get to your phone, it's going to take the player who is now inactive and replace them with the next highest rated player automatically in your lineup. Like, it'll do that for you. That is going to be crucial for your lineup, for your fantasy football lineup this season. So I think adding the additional bench spots and the additional IR spots, if your fantasy football platform does not do that for you, right? If they don't designate a specific IR spot that's COVID, 19 list eligible, get ready to add those additional IR spots. Yeah. Chris, do you have anything?
Yeah, not really. I think you said it perfectly. I think you definitely need to have a couple more IR spots, whether it's unlimited or not. And just, yeah, I think I got flex draft this weekend where usually you draft 16. We're bumping it up to 19, so bigger benches. And I don't know. I haven't looked too much into this. I'm just kind of thinking off the top of my head. I play in a few head-to-head leagues, and I just wonder, you know, with baseball happening, you know, we've seen some late scratches with COVID. If somebody gets scratched at like a 4 p.m. game or a 4:25 game, or are you going to be able to swap in a bench guy who played at 1? Probably not, but can you give your commissioner, can you guys set up something in your league where the commissioner is able to kind of like feel like a best ball feel where you're, you know, if you don't have a guy play at 4:25 because of COVID or Sunday night or Monday night, maybe you can just take one of your best bench wide receivers as an example, so you don't get a zero there. And, you know, that's going to happen to certain people. I'm not really sure how the COVID is going to go in the NFL in terms of testing. We could see some late scratches. We could really burn some people and could, you know, take the fun out of playing fantasy. So I think if you want everyone potentially on the same page, you can give the commissioner, maybe they'll just have to edit manually. Hey, your guy didn't play, you got a zero at 4, you know, you had Will Fuller on your bench.
Yeah.
35 points. Right, yeah, right. Plug him in as an example.
I agree with everything you guys said. That makes a lot of sense. Next question is from Chadwick James 20. Who's going to be this year's cheat code similar to Lamar Jackson and Chris Godwin last year? Yates, you're first.
The guy that immediately comes to mind is Calvin Ridley. As far sure. as if we're looking for a guy who's going to be Chris Godwin, then it's Calvin Ridley. Another guy would be Robert Woods. We talked about him earlier on the podcast where Robert Woods, I mean, is currently the wide receiver 26 in the ADP consensus.
No, he's not.
That's way too low. Way too low. And I think that he could be a guy who absolutely outperforms that easily and could finish as a top 12 wide receiver this year easily. So those are two guys that come to my mind. As far as at the quarterback position, there's not someone that jumps out where you're saying a guy is going super late as a direct comparison from Lamar Jackson. But
Ryan Tannehill.
No, that's not happening. So I think if you're looking like the wide receiver, though, that I'll mention is Calvin Ridley and Robert Woods.
All right. Who do you have for us, Chris? Who comes to your mind?
Yeah, I like both of those calls. I'll go a little bit deeper. According to Fantasy Pros, Preston Williams, wide receiver 49. And you got Devontae Parker at wide receiver 24. I'm a big Parker fan, but I think Williams has, you know, terrific value. We're talking about Galladay and Jones as maybe 1A, 1B. I think he can put these guys in consideration of 1A, 1B, if not maybe Williams. So it's just Williams, 7.5 targets, 4 catches, 53 yards per game over his first 8 contests. Those were better numbers than what Parker had. A 21% target share for Williams compared to 18 for Parker. Parker really went off when Williams had the injury, and Williams led all rookies in targets. He had 60 over the first 9 weeks of the season. Then he had that injury, but even still, like in that small sample size, he had 10 red zone targets to Parker's team high 14. So I think that, you know, Parker, I think we're just really, I think we're just really forgetting that he just disappeared over those last few games. And Parker got a ton of volume. Parker is going to get top coverage. William is going to be a player inside the red zone. And it looks like he's ahead of his schedule in terms of recovery for a torn ACL. So Miami improved, you know, they improved the offensive line. They got some players on defense. They really spent some money. I don't think they're going to be as bad as years past. But I think Williams could be a target monster. I don't think he's going to Chris Godwin, like, what, 1,400 yards, just shy of it. It's probably not going to happen, but 70-plus catches, 900 yards, I think it's very doable.
He was better than Parker while they were both on the field last year, and Parker was amazing afterward.
Amazing.
But, Preston Williams is a fantastic young football player. I'm excited about him. Now, what comes to mind for me is, who have these guys been the last couple years? You can think back to James Conner, Alvin Kamara, Kareem Hunt, D'Angelo Williams, Alfred Morris. These guys were all backup running backs to start the season. There's an injury to a key back and a great offense early on. And so it's going to be one of the four or five guys who are high-end backups. Tony Pollard, Alexander Mattison, Latavius Murray, Chase Edmonds. One of these dudes has a chance to explode. Historically speaking,
absolutely,
that's the guy with the best odds. I'll also throw in Johnny Smith. I know Yates and I both absolutely love him, and I think that he's kind of a cheat code. Now, last question here. This one's from David Brown. Superflex half PPR redraft league. Who are you targeting as your second quarterback? We don't talk about Superflex leagues all that often. I want to throw you guys a bone at the end of the draft, though. Yates, who do you like?
The question is, what round are you targeting?
Oh, I'm sorry. What round? Sure. Okay.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to check. So
give me a name, by the way. One that you would target.
Sure. So as a rule of thumb, I like to walk in a Superflex draft. I like to walk out of, within the first 4 rounds, I like to walk out with 2 QBs. So because I value quarterbacks highly in Superflex leagues, because if one of your quarterbacks goes down, you're kind of up a creek without a paddle. So I really, really like to, I like to have quarterbacks on my bench. And so I will, if that's taking one in the first round and then doubling back with the one in the fourth round where you're looking at someone like, you know, you get Kyler Murray, Deshaun Watson in the first round, whatever. And then in the fourth round, you're coming back and you're getting a Gardner Minshew, Derek Carr. I don't know. It all depends on what quarterbacks have gone off the board before that. Sure. I mean, maybe Daniel Jones is still there. I don't know. But those kind of guys where I like to walk out of the first four rounds with two quarterbacks.
First four rounds. Okay.
I kind of the same way, four or five rounds. I'd like to definitely get one in the first two rounds with somebody I think is going to be a top five quarterback. And then I'll probably, you know, again, target maybe round three or round four. And then in that range, you are looking at potentially, you know, if I can get a Carson Wentz as my second quarterback, a Baker Mayfield, Matthew Stafford, a Tom Brady in around that range. And then I'll get a third one probably because they're going to fly off the board. And I'm telling you, you're not going to be successful if you have two.
I mean,
it may feel a little weird to draft four, but injuries are going to happen. We got COVID to talk about. There's nothing worse than, you know, having only being able to play one quarterback when you're going up against somebody who has two strong options. So, and then I'll look again to a little bit later on with somebody with some upside. Yates mentioned Carr. I think Minshew is a terrific value this year. Is a Jacksonville team that's going to be throwing the football a ton, coming from behind. Minshew finished fifth in carries per game, fifth in rushing yards, 11th in red zone rushing attempts. So he has that going for him as well. And then another guy that I like actually, and I'm probably alone here, is Drew Lock. I just like all the weapons that they brought in Denver. And for Drew Lock, and it was a very small sample size, but a 63% completion rate in his rookie season was better than Carson Wentz, was better than Deshaun Watson. He did that without Emmanuel Sanders. They're really only throwing the football to Cortland Sutton and Noah Fant. So they bring in Jerry Jeudy, KJ Hamler. They got Melvin Gordon, Lindsey catching balls out of the backfield. So there's a few options for Drew Lock, and you're just going to be able to get him towards the very end. Either him or Carr, I think both solid options as like your fourth quarterback.
Lots of upside with Lock, absolutely. Agree. Minshew's kind of a cheat code with his rushing ability and everything. For me, I don't really know the round, but basically I'm paying attention to when are two of these three off the board, or the first time that either Baker Mayfield, Ryan Tannehill, or Joe Burrow comes off the board, I'm taking my guy. I'm taking Tannehill, or I'm taking Burrow, or I'm taking Baker Mayfield. That's who I want as my number two quarterback. I prefer someone like Carson Wentz, Aaron Rodgers as my number one, maybe Dak, depending on how late I can get him, you know, second round. That'd be awesome. Mm-hmm. For number three, I want something like Tyrod and Herbert, or Ryan Fitzpatrick and Tua. That way I can guarantee that I've got myself a third quarterback. So, guys, that's all for today's show. Chris, really appreciate you taking the time to come on.
Yeah, and thanks for having me. Always a pleasure. Follow both of your guys' work, and hopefully we can chat again soon. Thanks for listening.
Give Chris a follow on Twitter, guys. He's at Chris Meany. I'm at Bobby Fantasy Pro, and Yates is at Kyle Y NFL. And don't forget to sign up for our signed Davante Adams Packers jersey. You can check out the details for this contest at fantasypros.com/contest. And all you need to do is head on over to Apple Podcast or Stitcher, leave us an honest review, take a screenshot of that, and send it to us at contest@fantasypros.com. For Chris Meany and Kyle Yates, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your football. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without finger sticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
Carol G.
Juan Gabriel.
Christina Aguilera.
What do these three have in common?
You mean apart from impeccable style, chart-topping canciones, and drama?
Facts, yes, all of the above are correct, but most importantly, they're some of the biggest Latin icons in the world. And they're just a few of the game-changing Latin stars we're covering in Becoming an Icon Season 2. Listen to Becoming an Icon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.